This week's pod is supported by Manscaped. Manscaped has just launched in the UK. We've gone years without using the right tools for the job, and now you can be one of the first people in England to experience Manscaped's life-changing products. Manscaped is a skin-safe trimmer for below-the-belt shaving. Their 7,000 RPM motor has quiet stroke technology, and I know you fellas like a quiet stroke. So they tell us that Manscaped's technology will make your testes their besties, and you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code NQAT at manscaped.com. That's code NQAT for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com.
Well, Ed, well, back from an international break.
We are.
And we've got loads to talk about. Oh. So much. This is going to be a content-packed show that you should all definitely listen to it all.
Fill us in on the international break then, Paul, because I watched precisely no minutes of international football.
Yeah, that is the commensurate number of minutes of international football which I watched during the break. I think England were knocked out cruelly of their bid to become back-to-back third place UEFA Nations League people.
Yes. Well, that's something to do with losing to Belgium and Denmark in the previous two games, I think. But I spent more time working out how you qualify from and the format of the Nations League than I did actually watching any of it. So very confused because there were Euro playoff games going on at the same time as the Nations League game, and then the World Cup draw happens next week or something. So for qualification is very confusing.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Euro 2020 is going to be in 2021 tells you how confusing this has all got. I mean, the thing that was extra confusing is a lot of the teams in the playoffs that were happening were in the playoffs because of the previous Nations League. This was like the coming to fruition of the previous. So lots of teams that are going to now be in the Euros. Scotland, I think Hungary, although they might have qualified from the groups for a playoff stage. Did North Macedonia make it to the Euros? Is that a thing that really happened?
Well, it's the thing that you said that happened. I didn't check the veracity of that claim.
Right, okay. I don't know, maybe I'm completely... No, but yeah, because like Goran Pandev scored in their playoff and they're going to the Euros. So that's quite remarkable. England stuffed Iceland 4-0 in cold-hearted vengeance for them.
2016.
That game I was always like quite glad that England lost because there was a guy in the crowd that had Brexit 16 on his back because it was like the day after or 2 days after the vote or something.
That's right. Yes. I do remember that game. It was like 4 a.m. or something because I was in Beijing at the time, I think.
Right.
Yes. Anyway, so.
And then that all ended and everyone was like, yay, United are back.
Woohoo. Yes.
And their excitement about United lasted for, I don't know, the first 5 minutes were pretty good. Looked really like buzzy. Martial nearly scored the Chicharito goal with the back of his head.
Yeah, that was only just a few minutes in, wasn't it? And then he had a great chance not long after that, which he fluffed somewhat. Did you enjoy Saturday night football?
Yeah, well, I enjoyed it because I already had plans before I realised. I mean, I say plans. They were on the computer, obviously, like all plans nowadays. So I had it on in the background while I was playing Among Us with some friends. And every time I looked up, something fairly interesting was happening. But I understand that's mostly just because I didn't look up that much at the game. I've watched the highlights back and it looks like sort of quite a good game in highlights, like some pretty big chances for United. West Brom got close a couple of times. There's some contentious penalty stuff, but ultimately everyone's takeaway on this game seems to be it was really boring.
Yeah, well, I thought the first half was pretty dull. I mean, yes, Martial tried to hit it in with the back of his head after a minute. He had a very good chance after about 15 or so, where he just... I mean, it was around about the penalty spot and you'd expect him to tuck it away and he didn't. Sam Johnstone made one of several saves on the night. H United player.
Some good ones too.
Yeah, made some good ones. He seemed to be on it, which, you know, for United fans of a certain age, that brings back some awful memories of goalkeepers pulling out their career best games just when United needed to win. But, I mean, obviously this was not a crucial game. And we may find out at the end of the season whether it's the difference between something and nothing or not. At the moment, it's looking like not. But that was about it for the first half. A couple of good chances. I mean, United obviously had loads of the ball, had the best chances. You know, you could make an argument for United deserving to win in some way. But in the end, there just wasn't enough intensity, not enough of the best chances created, not enough killer instinct in those few chances that United had. For it to amount to much, really. And this is a West Brom side that hadn't won yet this season. And I think one of the frustrating things, which obviously not an original idea, this one, being pointed out by everyone and their dog, that going into this game with two holding players, two at number six, even if that's a kind of a formation that has worked for United in recent games, at home against West Brom with two number sixes seemed a bit like overkill. And we kind of got that performance.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the selection of Matic over McTominay is, broadly speaking, an attacking change at this point, because Matic is not much cop defensively, but he is good at picking a pass, and we have been kind of sorely lacking in the picking of passes. But the having Matic matter, the centre-backs, like, this is... We're back to slow, aren't we? And there's obviously pace on the pitch, but perhaps not enough of it. And it's interesting that Mata seems to have sort of reclaimed a first team slot. I do think...
Yeah, I do wonder how long that will last. I mean, he had that one good game at Newcastle and that was it, right?
Yeah. The thing I was going to say is we're going to talk a lot about this game and then we're going to talk about what's coming next and blah, 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 blah. I just want to like preempt this in a way by saying I actually think that the wildly harsh criticism that has been flying around is perhaps a little misguided given the scale of the challenge of squad management that is being faced here and the fact that this game comes after an international break where all the players are just absolutely exhausted and we're in November and it's about to get really crazy, playing within themselves.
All the players that were away and played, of course. I mean, many of them didn't, but many of them did. De Gea went away with Spain, didn't play. He seems to have lost his place in the Spanish team. Not to Kepa. Tellez went away, had this drama with the coronavirus test. Looks like it was a false positive, not least because he tested positive for coronavirus previously. All very confusing. Maguire played. Lindelof didn't go because he had this ankle injury, right? So Wan-Bissaka didn't go. Fred didn't go. Matic, I don't know, actually. Is he still playing international football, Matic? Not sure. Rashford didn't go. Fernandes did. Mata didn't go. Martial did, but he got a minor knock. He played one game for France and then sat out the next. So, you know, it's half squad with having played.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm almost talking about like some of the selection choices and stuff as well. You know, maybe erring towards the players that didn't go at the cost of some of the cohesion that you might
and
have
I'm,
got.
And no doubt, look, and I have sympathy for Ollie, of course, loads of sympathy, because he's going to be in this situation where he's managing so many games this season, plus absolutely pointless international fixtures. I mean, it's one thing, competitive fixtures, whether we can call the Nation League that yet or not, I don't know. I mean, do we care about it? But the friendlies are winning because it was three international games and teams stuck friendlies in there as well, or for some. In the middle of a pandemic with travel and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, it was so bonkers that Norway had a game, I can't remember who they were facing now, And there's so many players that had to isolate because of club or international or travel restrictions that they had to call up players from all around Europe. I had one player who's like in the third division in France or something like that. So I know it's about money, and I know it's about the fact that all the international associations, or specifically UEFA and FIFA, are trying to stay relevant and fighting for relevance and fighting for money. But it doesn't half seem extremely, some extremely poor choices being made, you know, for player health and safety and welfare, because the amount of fixtures they're playing and the risk, the extra risk they get with travelling around and mixing with different groups. So loads of sympathy for Ollie. He's got to manage all of that, and he's got to manage the number of club games and the fact that there are so many club games of a great intensity. He can't really rest players for the Champions League, because when he does, we get what happened last time out in Istanbul. And so he's got a lot to manage. That said, it's the same for a lot of managers. You know, and managing the squad and managing in-game is going to be a key skill.
Yeah, and it's a problem. It's a real problem. And it was, you know, I mean, that's United's first home win of the season in the league. That's genuinely remarkable. And it was not exactly a comfortable and confident win. And another game with no goals from open play and relying on a penalty. Now, often we've relied on penalties where you could go, well, actually, we've worked these penalties with really good attacking play. And this is like the reason that United get so many penalties for the most part is that quite a lot of intricate passes and movers in the box. This one was one of those where you just whack it in the direction of the box. It clips the player's hand in a way that is like incredibly harsh to punish, but probably accurate within the rules. You get the penalty, it gets saved in a way that is definitely within the rules, but unquestionably harsh. He has to retake it. You know, it was another one of these like awful robot football.
It is. I mean, games. But you have to have boundaries. I think someone was suggesting on Twitter today, which Sam Johnston then replied to, that goalkeepers should be allowed the freedom of their 6-yard box. But all you're doing is shifting the line that you have to stick to 6 yards forward. I mean, which, who knows, you know, less reaction time, narrower angles. So I suspect that, you know, hands more advantage to the keepers. But we'd then be still going, well, was he ahead of the 6-yard box or not ahead of the six-yard box? It's just an arbitrary line, or not even that arbitrary. It's a painted line. And this is why we have those rules. And, you know, it's the same argument with offside, not offside. And it feels robotic because we've got machines helping us do it, but correct. And I suspect all goalkeepers are going to have to go through this before they learn something. For the retake, he came off his line as well. So, I mean, he hadn't learned. He's not a quick learner, Sam Johnson, but he'll have to learn.
Well, it's incredibly hard to learn, because your whole penalty saving technique is based on the little half step forward and then go. So you're shifting your weight and then you're moving yourself side one side or the other. Without that weight shift, it's got to feel really weird muscle memory wise, given how many penalties they would have trained against and, you know, all of that stuff.
For sure. Yes. It's interesting that he's had three penalties saved, actually. Bruno has now, and two of them have been retaken because of encroachment. So it's the only way you can stop him. And the other one.
And one time something happened, but we don't talk about that. Before that, West Brom had a penalty given and ruled out. I mean, to me, like, there was a lot of talk about whether this was controversial or not. I don't fully understand. I mean, it looked to me like a very clear-cut case that the referee had misread the action in real time, and in fact Bruno got the ball, not the man, and then clipped him afterwards, rather than, which is probably the contact that the referee heard, if he did hear contact. But that one looked fairly clear-cut to me. I wonder if it had been the other team. No, I'm pretty sure if it was a West Brom player fouling Bruno in that way, I'd have gone, that's not a foul, he's got the ball, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to second guess by rose-tinted glasses here, red-tinted glasses. to what my reaction was. But I like the fact they have the monitor with VAR. I think it makes the system much, much better because it then becomes a tool for the referees to go off and use to improve their own standard. He then has to make a judgment, and we're never going to get away from that judgment part of football because, you know, unfortunately, fortunately, and this is why we love it, it's a very dynamic sport. It's not exactly like DRS in cricket or Hawkeye in tennis where, you know, to within fractions of a millimetre you can be sure or not sure. Something like this, it's just a tool for the referee to use, and I think it's much better for it. For what it's worth, I agree with your assessment. I think Bruno's got the ball, and the follow-through is you know, not hard at all. And the player made as much of as he could of it, as you would in that kind of situation, and it was probably the right call to overturn it. I can understand why some of the West Brom players might have been miffed about that one, especially since then there's a penalty at the other end.
Miffed that it happened, but not. I mean, I don't know how you could look at that decision and be miffed that it had gone the way it went because it's not a foul.
Yes, West Brom Twitter were not in agreement with you, from what I saw.
Yeah, okay.
It's a small group.
Yeah, that's the nature of football fans, I suppose. I think the penalty United got, it's a stupid rule, but that's the rule. That's a penalty under the current interpretations as I understand them, the limited way to which I understand them.
Yeah. Yeah. It is.
Fine.
Yeah.
And then Rashford should have probably scored.
Very good
later
chance
on.
Late on. Yeah. Yeah. His season hasn't really come to life yet, has it? I mean, he had this injury that kept him out of the shoulder injury, I think. Kept him out of the England games.
The Leipzig hat trick. That's it. The, yeah. Like 10 really good minutes this season, and a lot of absolutely miraculous minutes off the pitch.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, that's right. Obviously, continue doing the good work off the pitch. We want to, some of it on the pitch as well. Not that these things are mutually exclusive, of course. And of course, you know, the other big talking point from the whole game was the fact that Pogba wasn't available. He did play for France, picked up an ankle injury. That's worrying. It's the thing that cost him most of last season. Of course, there was an awful lot of talk about him because he did this interview with French TV over the break.
He had the audacious gall to say that he liked his international teammates.
I know.
What a scumbag. What a scumbag. Listen, Pogba's said some questionable things on international duty, and Pogba's been absolutely garbage this season on the pitch. And this was absolute nonsense that people just wanted what they already believed to be confirmed by a mistranslated remark. Like, very, very non-controversial what he said. He said, I'm not saying anything. He literally said, I'm not saying anything bad about, of course, you know, like my time at the club, basically, he said, but we have a magical connection in the national team. They won the World Cup together. Like, he's not saying, oh, you stupid Man United scum. Listen, it doesn't mean there's no problem with the Pogba United situation, but this isn't the problem.
No, exactly.
With the
Pogba
United
situation. Fabrizio Romano from The Guardian and other outlets copied and pasted that tweet because it was on another website. I followed the trail. And it was just a very, very poor translation. He didn't say that. In fact, it was a poor translation and two parts of his interview smashed together to make it look like it was one quote, which happens quite a bit, I have to say. And you know, he does interviews. And I suppose, you know, if you were Pogba and you wanted to stay clear of bad headlines, you might do no interviews. But, you know, just as an example, right? Olivier Giroud yesterday did an interview, or a couple of days ago, did an interview saying he's not getting any game time at Chelsea and he probably has to leave as a result. He thought it was going to be different. He was told it was different and therefore he now needs to go. I mean, can you see the world melting down? Because everyone's going, yeah, all right, fair enough. You know, you're just being honest. You know, Pogba says something that's not even remotely crucial, controversial, when the world melts down. And of course, it's that, you know, it's there for clicks and You know, our friends in the Fourth Estate are doing that because they know it'll get traffic and it generates excitement. And but, you know, there's quite a few United fans with large audiences who seem to enjoy sort of fanning the flames of that too.
Yeah, because I was going to say the Fourth Estate stuff's all very well, but it has real life consequences, and I guess not quite real life in this case, but close to real life consequences, where you've got like lots of perfectly normally reasonable United fans, and basically this is because everyone is sick of Pogba, right? That's what the reality is, and it, you know, you can understand why people are sick of some of this stuff. I mean, in the last international break, he did say, of course, any player would love to play for a club like Real Madrid and Zidane is one of my heroes, or something to those words. Not literally the second part, but the first part almost word for word. And that is incendiary in its way. That's fine. Like, I don't mind people getting annoyed about that. And he's been rubbish. This is the thing. He's been rubbish this season. Like, really bad. He's had a couple of impactful substitute appearances, but he's not played well from the start in a single game.
No, that's true. You know, and the mitigating circumstances we talked about a lot, and Ollie did the other week as well, in referencing the coronavirus, which he said had impacted him quite a bit. But the other thing to say about this, you know, for all the people who want him gone, do you think United will be better? United won't be better one iota when he's left. It's not going to change the future of the club. It's not going to change his team around. It isn't suddenly going to get better. There will be less drama, right? But the drama only exists because you're reading the newspapers and clicking through to the articles that are creating the sensational stuff. I don't think it's in the dressing room, you know, that everyone's going, you did an interview with TF again, you know, out of here, Pogba, on your bike, son, you know. Yeah. It doesn't, I mean, like, stand to be corrected over the course of time. It doesn't seem that the Pogba situation is creating ripples in the dressing room, and that's an issue. Now, if you told me that United will sell him for loads of money and all that money would be reinvested sensibly and intelligently in the right kind of players that would take United forward, I'd say you're lying to me, because that's never happened since May 2013, you know? Yeah. Or if you've got a crystal ball that tells me that United suddenly get it right, then great.
I mean, that's a long... May 2013 is a remarkably generous date to set for when that last happened, because it's not like United reinvested money from big player sales in, 2009. Well, it's just they had the greatest manager in history.
What are you talking about? You're saying Michael Owen and Gabriel Obertan and Antonio Valencia weren't sound investments, didn't take United forward. 2009 Champions League final. He was there. 2011 Champions League final.
Yeah, I mean, in the five seasons after that transfer was conducted, United, is it five seasons? So 2010, 11, 12, 13. In the next four seasons, United won 50% of the leagues that were conducted, and the two they lost by 1 point and goal difference in the last minute of the season. So, you know, it worked out fine, but that's because of Fergie and not because of well-executed transfer strategy, because the transfer strategy has been a joke for a really long time at United. In fact, all the way through the Glazer era. Basically.
Sure. Yeah, no, true. And because they need the final sign off on everything that's done, and they won't modernise anything because they need the final sign off on everything that's done, because it's associated with their business model, not the business of buying players sensibly. And you know, I know this was a mega diversion from what was a sort of discussion about West Brom and then Pogba. But you know, the idea that we boot Pogba out and everything's better because he riles you up because there are a few quotes, you know, misquoted quotes on many occasions, or you know, marginal interviews such as the one about every player would love to play for Real Madrid and Zidane's my hero, which I thought was, you know, kind of harmless, that one, to the yes, I'd like to play for Real Madrid sort of stuff, you know, on a continuum. Like, it's not going to make your life better that he's gone. Maybe he winds you up for some reason. But I suggest that's because you're reading too many of the things.
Yeah, I mean, also, though, I do think his performances have been... I mean, I'm a huge Paul Pogba defender and will continue to be. I find him a lovely player to watch. I was incredibly excited when he signed for United. I've enjoyed lots of the moments that he's provided since then, from big moments to small moments. He can do things with the football that no one else in our team can do, but we haven't seen much of that lately. Hopefully that is because... I mean, last season, a complete write-off for him, and not because his head was elsewhere, but because his ankle was elsewhere. And this season, if it is because of coronavirus, then, you know, I really hope he takes advantage of the rest and gets well.
People push back on that argument, both the injury and the coronavirus argument and the other injuries he's had and say, well, you know, he doesn't want it enough and he was never really injured and all of that kind of, there is that pushback for sure, you know, and it's conspiracy theory stuff, of course.
Exactly, like that. That's almost like you just need to platform that argument. Like, why are we giving voice to the idea that he wasn't really injured last season? Any push, that's like Trump saying he lost the election, he won the election. Like, it just is a thing that didn't actually happen, that people have got it in their, like, obsessively certain of nonsense they read on the internet.
Yeah. Well, what basically. I think Pogba should do, just to solve this problem once and for all, he should go on national television, hold a press conference, and get really hot and sweaty and let his hair dye, drip down his face, and everyone would feel much better about it.
No, that's not the right analogy. He's not that person in the...
I know. It wasn't an analogy, it was a joke. Yes, the whole press conference was a joke, and yeah. Anyway, I hope Pogba's back, and I do understand he has not turned out to be the player that we all desperately wanted him to be for enough of his time with United. I think he's had many excellent games and many excellent moments, but it doesn't all stitch together to be the player we want. But that is true of many, many, many players that have been brought into our club, because it's hard to bring players into a club and it doesn't always work out.
And more than anything, it's hard to bring players into this club in the state it's been in for almost all of the time. Now, that really does go back to May 2013. That's the cutoff. You know, ever since then, it's been a shambles. And the players that have come in, you know, there's lots of players that have burnt brightly and done really exciting things and looked really promising. But there's absolutely no one, not one player. Are they all rubbish? Like, is that how it is? Is every player that's played for United since 2013 just rubbish? Or is the situation, has the situation been so many different varieties of toxic and unmanageable that they simply haven't been able to consistently express themselves? Name one player who's been consistent since 2013.
No, I can't. Yeah, I don't think there is one.
No,
there. I mean, like, or yeah, from prior to that time... I mean, it's only David De Gea that remains now, and Phil Jones. Now that Mike Smalling's been sold, and of all the players, I mean, you know, I once did a spreadsheet I don't think I haven't shared it. Just to kind of go through.
This is just what you do for fun.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I've got lots of friends. Okay. I just think I shared it with you and Tom, which was, you know, just a kind of green, amber, red on all the purchases United made. And I think it's a tiny handful that have been unequivocal successes. A tiny handful. And a few on the marginal side of things. But, you know, no doubts. What have we got?
Yeah.
Bruno?
So, yeah, but... You can't say Bruno's no doubts, by the way. A lot of people, plenty of doubts about Bruno. I mean, the fact that, I don't know if you've ever known about this, Ed, that I'm about to say, this might be new information to you, but I don't know if you know, he gives the ball away 25% of the time he has it. I've never heard that. I love Bruno, but there's doubts even about him. So, sure. I mean, you can't doubt his numbers although a lot of them have been penalties.
Quite a lot of penalties.
They really have been, a lot of his goals have been
good,
penalties.
Good number of assists, though, as well.
Yeah, very good.
And,
very,
you know,
very
and
good.
And look, that's what he does. He puts up good numbers. And But look, in the team, De Gea, a couple of poor seasons. I mean, he's been okay this season. Wan-Bissaka, I mean, good first season, but that's about what he could be. You know, he's not a well-rounded player. I'm not going to run through them all.
We just have this conversation every week about each of these players.
Fine. But in this team, plenty of players that, I mean, all of them, except for Bruno, even Sir Marcus. And Martial, who had a, you know, interesting game yesterday, because actually I thought, apart from the misses, he was quite effective.
Yeah, he's a really good number nine.
But that's about him as well, because he's had one, I mean, apart from his first season where he got a good number of goals, he's had one season in his five at United that...
Yeah, and the point that I'm making, ultimately, is actually not about the quality of the players. That's kind of the opposite to the point I'm making. It's like, it's the level of judgment about the quality of the players, given that it's every single one of them. Then you have to start to look at the structures, the coaching, the managerial decisions, because, you know, they've not had a single sane managerial appointment in this whole process. Progressive managerial appointment. All the managerial appointments have either been crazy or regressive. Those are the two categories. And
I think they all go into the first, honestly. I mean...
Well, Mourinho wasn't a crazy appointment. That was... there was every chance that he would force a league title out of that squad, you know.
And then burn it to the ground.
Yeah, which is crazy.
He did better than the league title, though. He finished second, which was the greatest achievement a manager could ever have. I had a brief discussion with Wayne Barton, friend of the show, who's been on here a couple of times to talk about his books about this. And, you know, he's of the optimistic bent and was being optimistic on Twitter. So I had to... interject with some of my cynicism, which, you know, I think United's mediocrity as a club is planned. You know, if the Glazer family wanted this club to be successful, assuming they knew how to do that, which, you know, they don't, but assuming they did and they wanted to be successful, the amount of money that United generates could generate a very successful club that was fighting for the title pretty much every year. Because we'd have the right kind of appointments in place to get the right players, to give the tools to the best managers. And it all flows down from there. And you know, adding on that, a squad that's unbalanced, plenty of players that aren't good enough, and a manager who's still trying to prove himself all the time and will be. And we're coming up to, we're a month away from his second anniversary in the job. And, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know whether he'll make a third. He might do.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of rallying calls to not be too negative about the game yesterday, and it's a decent result. And we were rubbish often under Fergie is a common refrain. It's like...
missing some context out there.
Yeah, exactly. We definitely were often like fairly rubbish 1-0s were somewhat routine under Fergie, but they weren't the best it got. they weren't the good exceptions to the rule anyway.
Anyway, look, there have been times, you know, just a final thought. There have been plenty of times during Ollie's reign in which United have played great football, really exciting football, probably the best football of the post-Fergie era in terms of its sort of style and flair. This was not it. And it's not been that at all this season.
Apart from against Leipzig.
Apart from against Leipzig for 10 minutes, because that first half was quite rubbish against Leipzig as well.
Talking of Leipzig, Van der Beek started that game. It is getting weird, by the way. Like, I know it's early, it's still early, not jumping any guns. Remember Fabinho in his first season at Liverpool hardly played. So, long way to go. But it's starting to feel a bit weird, the Van der Beek. It's just a little starting to cross over from like the way over the top overreaction to the first couple of games to now starting to look at it like side eye emoji, going, this is a bit weird.
Yeah, I mean, look, he has been bought to be Bruno Fernandes's understudy, and that is the only role which Ollie will consider him for, unless it's off the bench to play off the left or whatever, which is what he did yesterday. So it's very odd when you have so many holes in your squad and this was the purchase made. Kind of smacks of opportunism.
But the thing about him more than anything else is, like, he's really good and you should definitely try and get him in the team. Because he's quite often, stop me if this is A, too radical, or B, you've heard this one before, but when he's been on the pitch, he's often looked like United's sort of most functional passer of the ball on the pitch. Is that wild to say?
He has many qualities which I'd like to see in the team, and I reckon a home game against West Brom would be the ideal one to try that out.
But maybe it will indeed be a home game against Istanbul Başakşehir. Let's take a little break and then come back and talk about that one. If you want more from the show in between shows, check us out on the socials. We are NQATpod on Instagram, Ed's at NQATpod on Twitter, and we are under our real names on Facebook at No Question About That. We're playing Istanbul again, because the games just keep coming, because we've had our two-week break now, and now no break until March. Just two Man United games to watch, and then in our case, have to talk about, and in your cases, for some reason, choose to listen to us talk about between now and then. Is this going to be a return to the glorious, exciting first two games of United's Champions League campaign, or will it be more bang average home form, struggling to break down a committed deep lying defence? They beat us, didn't they, in Istanbul?
They did, with some of the most laughable defending you'll ever see from a United team. Istanbul lost to Beşiktaş, and also from Istanbul, as many of the big teams in Turkey are. At the weekend, so not good. They've actually not been on a very good run this season.
No.
They lost a friendly the week before that to...
Well, global nationalism is, like, reactionary right-wing nationalism does appear to be slightly on the decline again, so maybe this is modelled in their performances.
No, I don't think so. So, I mean, they had won four Super League games before that, but they are in sixth place in the league. You know, not pleasing their paymasters, I'd say. There, they ought to be careful about that one. And look, more seriously, they are not a great side. This is not a side that United should be losing to. And there was Harry Maguire said after the last one, he kind of asked this question about whether it was complacency, which I have to say, if you're a Manchester United player, there shouldn't be any of at all. But he did mention it because of the 5-0 win against Leipzig. And so, yeah, now it, because of that loss in the last game, it's really critical that United win this game, which would put the team in a good position, 9 points from four games, but United play Leipzig and then Paris Saint-Germain in the last two games, and they could end up becoming really crucial.
Yeah, I mean, this one is absolutely must win, isn't it? The really sad thing about this game, though, is that there's no fans there, and the fact that Raphael is coming back to Old Trafford with no supporters is genuinely slightly heartbreaking, because the amount of, like, he is a player who was really, really, really well liked at Old Trafford anyway, and has just, a bit like Patrice Evra, you know, since he's left, the estimations in which he's held have just gone up and up and up and up and up, because it comes abundantly clear what an obsessive red he is. And yeah, really sad that he's not going to get the hero's welcome he so richly deserves.
It's a shame, yes, and he won't even be able to go find a local pub and get the hero's welcome there either. So, I mean, look, I couldn't tell you what team it's going to be. It's going to be very close to what we had at the weekend, I assume. I mean, there's got to be some rotation. I mean, maybe Cavani's had enough minutes now to come into the team. There's going to have to be some rotation because there's just so many games. It's 12 in the next how many weeks?
Yeah, we worked it out last time, so we don't need to repeat it.
Yeah, whatever. It's definitely 2 games a week for the next 6 weeks, and then we're into the new year. Just bonkers. And then I think
there's it's more than 2 games a week in the over the next 6 weeks. Yeah. It's 2 games a week for the next 5, and then about 17 games.
Bonus. We're wondering by the way, we can have Christmas with our families, but you can watch 8 games a day, no problem.
By the way, like, probably not going to cover those on podcasts because I'm having Christmas off. It's my first 2 weeks off of the year.
Unbelievable. What were you saying? You have 2 weeks over Christmas. That's like 12 games.
Yeah, it's too bad. I don't want to get a muscle injury. Raymond Verheyen would have my back on this. But the point being, some rotation is probably necessary. Is McTominay all right?
Ollie said he just played a lot of games because he played for Scotland and he was a bit jaded. So, yeah.
Amazing achievement for Scotland getting to the Euros. Yeah. Massive. So I guess we might see McFred in midfield, especially given Fred did not go to international duty. So
he did
McFred.
Not. I mean, assuming Pogba's not fit because apparently it's not a serious injury.
Yeah.
So he may be good enough for the bench. We'll see.
Well, I mean, Fred and McTominay were keeping Pogba out
anyway,
fitness or otherwise. I mean, which is whatever. Fernandez, I guess Van der Beek might play. I wonder if he'll think actually you must win game, must play Bruno.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that's it. Yeah.
Tellez played left back against West Brom, which is sort of interesting given Luke Shaw got injured Brandon Williams is isolating or injured, one or the other, I can't remember.
Yeah, not seen much of him. Yeah, and I mean, I do wonder, there's definitely going to be a question because they didn't want to loan him out in the summer, I think because they're seeing summer. At the beginning of this season, I think because they see him as an understudy to Wan-Bissaka. He's a young player. He's suffering a period out of the team and towards the back end of last season, not great form either. You know, I'd like to see Williams back into the team. He's, not saying he has to displant Tellez or Wan-Bissaka, but he's a good young player. I'd like to see some minutes for him. I don't expect it will come in this game. And if he's not going to get any minutes, it's not good for him at all. And I wonder whether there'll be talk about a January loan move if he's not getting any minutes at all and not likely to.
Yeah, I was absolutely sure he was unavailable. That's why I'm looking a bit confused because I thought he was literally unavailable.
I don't know. He went away with England under 21s because he was tweeting about it. So.
All right, my bad. I got confused somehow. All right. I don't know what else to say about any of this. I feel like everything we've said on this episode, we've said before.
But maybe everyone they forgot it, so we have to remind them.
So. Maybe.
Yeah. No, we'd like some new things to talk about with United, but that involves United playing really well.
Yeah,
and maybe some new players playing and going on a run of games, so we can talk about how fantastic United are and run of games in which we play well and win games is what.
Yeah, because we're definitely going on a run of games. That's
definitely
for sure.
Having the run of games. Yes, I would like all of that positive stuff, but it's not overwhelmingly negative. If United win the game in hand, they will not be that far off the top four. And because, you know, it's early in the season and the league table is still quite compressed.
Yeah, and it's a sort of, you know, so after this game, we've got Southampton away, which is a challenging game, then PSG at home, then West Ham away. You know, there's points to be had, aren't there? Right, that'll do. What's the score going to be against Istanbul? I'm going for a rubbishy 1-0 win.
I'm going to say 3-0 because they're rubbish.
I don't understand. I don't understand. Wait, what about how we're rubbish?
We are rubbish, but they are really rubbish. This is a really, really rubbish side.
We scored one goal against them and they scored two goals against us the last time we played them.
Yes, I'm hoping a lesson has been learned.
Okay, good. All right, well, somehow Ed thinks that...
Plus Agent Raphael
is
going to lash one into his own net, isn't he?
Yeah.
At the Stretford end, sprinting 100 yards up the field.
Kissing the badge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for listening, everyone. Sorry about this. We'll be back with another one of these after that game.
Joy.
By the way, Patreon backers, stay tuned, where I'm going to demonstrate in the Patreon content why Jose Mourinho's current form at Tottenham Hotspur is nothing for those of us who've made our position extremely clear to worry about based on past history.
You're dripping sweat, Paul. Hang on. Do you dye your hair?
Steady as a rock.
This is a podcast. They can't see that.
No.
we'll see you all later in the week, folks.
Yeah. Everyone else, we'll see you soon. Patreon backers, stay tuned.